Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 27, 2015. Lawmakers say the effects of the shrinking South Sudanese economy has forced some of them to take a border ride on their way to the assembly.
Since that time, up to now, we don't have sitting allowance which is supposed to be received. So according to this situation also, now we are riding the border, some common footing because of the issue of diesel and whatever, the gas, the petrol.
And the governor of Jonglei State fires his finance minister.
The release of the minister is not related with the investigation. The investigation is something different, and the release of the minister of finance is something different too.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers say soaring prices of commodities are beginning to affect them. They say National Assembly attendance is down because some members of the parliament cannot afford to buy fuel for their cars. In today's session, lawmakers also complain that they have not been paid since April. Philip Thorn-Aleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawmakers were supposed to debate a report on the UN Convention on Protection of the Diversity of Cultural Expression, but that topic got put on a back burner when Deputy Speaker Mark Nyipoch complained of low attendance. Several MPs, including Pat Minyok Biliu from Unity State, says the poll in attendance is because of raising prices and the fact that they haven't been paid for weeks. Biliu says she no longer uses her car to come to the National Assembly. She walks to work because she has not been paid since April and cannot afford to rent her car.
Since that time, up to now, we don't have sitting allowance which is supposed to be received. So according to this situation also, now we are riding the border, some common footing because of the issue of diesel and whatever, the gas, the petrol.
Biliu says only 130 MPs attended today's parliamentary session. Nyipoch admits that MPs have not received their allowances since Parliament reopened last month. But he says that is not enough reason to not show up for work. Nyipoch says MPs should not abandon their constitutional obligations because of economic hardship.
As MPs, you endure whatsoever it is. You cannot go on a strike and say, in that case, because I'm not receiving a sitting allowance, I'm not attending to my duty. That would be for the first time in the world to hear that.
Nyipoch tied the non-payment of lawmakers' allowances to a bill before Parliament about how to regulate letters of credit, or LCs. But the Deputy Speaker's words rang hollow, and he did not convince those who did show up for today's session that not being paid was the result of the LC bill that is still being debated. One of the doubting MPs is Mary Nyaulang. She represents a youth source in Jonglei State.
One of the honorable members talked about the general situation in the market, the issue of the prices, and you related to the LC. My question is that this general situation in the market with the prices raising every hour and the general economic problem, why should we tied to the issue of the LC only? Is it the only way that we can address this market prices and economic problems through the LC?
Nyipoch did not answer Nyaulang's questions. Instead, she ruled that the discussion on skyrocketing prices and lawmakers not getting paid will resume until the Finance Committee reports its finding on the letters of credit issue. That is supposed to happen next week, although the Finance Committee declined to comment on what progress is being made on the LCs. For BOA News, I am Philip Thorn-Aleu in Juba.
Jonglei State's caretaker governor, John Kong Nyon, fired the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Dana Jok Obongo, following an investigation into the misuse of public funds. But as Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Juba, officials deny Minister Obongo's firing is in any way connected to the investigation.
Obongo, who served as Jonglei State's Finance and Economic Planning Minister since 2014, was officially removed from office yesterday. But the decree from caretaker Governor Nguyen did not explain why Obongo was being let go. The state's information minister, Judy Jonglei, insists the move is constitutional.
I cannot actually tell you exactly why he was released from his position. But what I know so far is it's a normal practice of the governor. The one who appoints is the one who can release. So I don't have much to say about this release.
Exact reason for minister's sacking are still unclear. However, according to the Sudan Tribune, the former finance minister allegedly diverted at least 300,000 South Sudanese pounds, which had been allocated for repairing state government vehicles. That report was later denied by Judy Jonglei, who is a member of the investigation committee. He said Obongo's sacking had nothing to do with any misuse of PAN.
It was not an investigation for the minister. It was a performance of the ministry. The release of the minister is not related with the investigation. The investigation is something different, and the release of the Minister of Finance is something different too.
But Director General from Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning, Duom Kualagir, says the minister himself was in fact investigated. Duom said findings of investigation are still confidential.
They have not been disclosed to anybody. The DG of Finance is not a member of the committee. Yeah, and the terms of reference are with the committee. They are not given to the Minister of Finance. What I know, there was a committee formed to investigate the minister, because that was concerning the minister.
Some officials from Greater Pibora Administrative Area, or GPAA, have also accused Obongo of improperly using Pibora Development Fund. GPAA Information Minister Sam David claimed Obongo wrongly obtained and shared GPAA County Development Grant with individuals in Jonglei State.
The money of county's development grant was not reached as in Greater Pibora Administrative Area. This money they are used without giving us. And the Minister of Finance from Jonglei State is the one know that money, and the rest within Jonglei State.
The Jonglei State former finance minister told South Sudan in Focus that he is not able to discuss his removal from office with the media. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
We now have a breaking sports news. Football's global governing body, FIFA, was rocked today by a massive U.S. federal corruption indictment against current and former top officials and the announcement of a separate investigation by Swiss authorities into allegations connected to the awarding of the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. Several FIFA officials have been arrested in Zurich. The U.S. indictment includes 47 counts against 14 people covering charges of racketeering, wire fraud and money laundering in a scheme that prosecutors say involves sports media executives paying more than $150 million in exchange for marketing rights to tournaments. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch held a press conference today in New York to announce the results of the investigation.
Now, many of the individuals and organizations we will describe today were entrusted with keeping soccer open and accessible to all. They held important responsibilities at every level, from building soccer fields for children in developing countries to organizing the World Cup. They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer to serve their interests and to enrich themselves. This Department of Justice is determined to end these practices, to root out corruption, and to bring wrongdoers to justice.
That's U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. The Justice Department described it as a 24-year scheme to enrich themselves through corruption of international soccer. Authorities in Zurich arrested seven FIFA officials today, pending extradition to the United States. U.S. authorities are carrying out more search warrants in Miami, and the Justice Department say four other individuals have already pleaded guilty in the case. One resident of the United Nations IDP camp in Juba was found dead last Saturday after he and other three were allegedly abducted late last week by suspected South Sudanese military personnel. The four were allegedly taken by force while heading to a nearby market. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Martin Kweth, who serves as Secretary General of the IDP camp established by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, told the VOA in a Wednesday phone call from the camp that this is just the latest in a series of similar incidents that have occurred outside the camp. Kweth says the four IDPs left the camp last Thursday to sell some goods, including carpets, at a nearby market. Kweth says he was told the men dressed in South Sudanese military seized the four and took them away to an unknown location. He says the four men were taken within 2 hours of leaving the camp. Kweth says he and others at the camp searched for the four men until Saturday morning, and then
some of the colleagues, they went to the teaching hospital, mortuary. They went and found the dead body of Mr. Guy Chitongyik. They call her that they found this Mr. Guy, and he has to be taken to the burial place. Then on 24th, so we buried Mr. Guy Tongyik near to IDP camp.
Guy's body was first found by police on patrol. Kweth says it was reportedly dumped along the Juba Yei Road. Kweth says Guy's body was found with the two bullet wounds. One shot entered his chest and exited through the chest, and another bullet was fired into his mouth. Kweth says the three other men reportedly abducted with the Guy were released on Saturday after being interviewed several times by security personnel.
The name of the three people, one of them called Tengkwe Ilong, and the other one called Guy Chul, and the other one is called Lamkir.
South Sudan National Police spokesman Colonel James Mande confirms the incident happened and says police officials regret what happened. Mande says preliminary findings have revealed that military intelligence agents arrested the four men, claiming that they were rounded up during night patrol.
The Inspector General of Police has directed the State Police Commission of Central Equatorial State to conduct a full and comprehensive investigation into the case, especially that there is a murder case involved, so the truth must be found.
Mande calls the incident an isolated case.
You find that the army is there, the national security is there, the military intelligence is there, the police are there. So that was why it was resolved that there should be a joint force working together so that the efforts can be coordinated.
Mande says the government has little power to provide security protection to camp residents because they are under the security control of UNMISS. UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Gantaya:
I can confirm that as long as the IDPs who have sought protection from physical threat are under protection of civilian side of UNMISS, they are under UNMISS protection. We do have police patrols within the compound to make sure that the IDPs are okay, and there is this form of a crowd control and public order in the POC side. But when it comes of being outside of the POC side, we are in a sovereign country, which is South Sudan, where there are security forces and security institutions who are in charge to ensure that there is safety in the country.
Earlier this month, an incident involving security personnel left one person dead and several others wounded. Mande says some 12,000 IDPs have left the camp in Juba to return homes, but many stay at the camp because they don't feel it's safe to go home.
The government said they're still hunting the IDPs wherever they are. We are informing the public, the whole camp, that no one should go outside the community to go and chat or to go in group or to go and do something, whatever they want there.
The POC site houses about 35,000 IDPs who fled to the camp beginning in late 2013 when fighting broke out in Juba. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Northern Bahr al-Ghazal officials say they are still waiting for more than 70 free tractors donated to farmers in Awil. We'll have that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The
question today.
How often do you go for a medical checkup?
Frequent medical checkup in South Sudan is not taken seriously. Actually, me myself, when I was young, I can see I will be there in the hospital when I'm sick. But if I'm not sick, I can't go for a medical checkup. But since now I'm grown up and I know the benefit of that of going for a frequent checkup, I go.
Our medical checkup, when we talk about Africa, actually I cannot talk about myself, but let's take from the African perspectives. Majority of the people, they don't believe in going to the hospital. But for me, as a student, I've been in a school, of course, I know the importance of how important is the health. Because when you are not healthy, you cannot even go to school and even you cannot go to work.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new UN report finds that just under 800 million people around the world are going hungry today. But that estimate has declined by more than 200 million people in the past 25 years. The annual report, dubbed the State of Food Insecurity in the World 2015, says chronic malnourishment also has declined in the world's developing regions, but more progress is needed in other areas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report is a joint effort by the United Nations' three major food agencies, the Food and Agriculture Organization, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, and the World Food Program. The report finds 72 out of 129 developing countries will have achieved the Millennium Development Goal of cutting hunger in half by the end of this year. The director of the World Food Program's Policy and Program Division, Stanley Samkange, applauds this result but says it is too soon to celebrate.
Since the establishment of the Millennium Development Goals, extreme poverty has been reduced by more than half. However, hunger has only been reduced by 14.5%. This provides clear evidence for the fact that growth and rising incomes do not correlate proportionately with improved food security and nutrition. Economic growth is not always inclusive. Rural livelihoods are not always invested in.
The report's hunger map shows why differences among the regions persist. It finds large reductions in hunger in East Asia and very fast progress in Latin America and the Caribbean, Southeast and Central Asia, as well as some parts of Africa. It says sub-Saharan Africa still has the highest prevalence of undernourishment in the world. Stanley Samkange of WFP says chronic hunger on the continent actually is on the rise.
In sub-Saharan Africa, nearly one in four are estimated to remain undernourished. Crisis environments like extreme weather events, natural disasters, political instability, and civil strife have all impeded progress in sub-Saharan Africa, but also in other countries. Globally, one in five of the world's undernourished lives in a crisis environment. Protracted crises have in many countries prevented the protection of vulnerable population groups and the promotion of income opportunities for all.
The report says severe food insecurity is close to being eradicated in North Africa, where the prevalence of undernourishment is now below 5%. Authors of the report say no single solution exists for improving food security, but that certain measures can have a great impact. They say improved agricultural productivity, especially by small and family farmers, leads to less hunger and poverty. And they say economic growth must be inclusive and benefit everyone in society, not just those who already are well off. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
To address food insecurity in South Sudan, President Kiir announced in April that he has purchased 1,000 tractors that will be distributed to farmers in all 10 states. But lawmakers in northern Bahr al-Ghazal say they are still waiting for the 76 tractors that they were supposed to get to help boost crop production in the state. As Abraham Agod reports for VOA from Awil, the lawmakers say the state's agriculture minister did not think through logistics of getting the tractors from Juba to Awil. But the minister's questioning whether they are the best option for northern Bahr al-Ghazal.
Santino Miwat Ngong represents the constituency of Mapeo in northern Bahr al-Ghazal State Legislative Assembly. He says the state and the national governments need to hurry up and send northern Bahr al-Ghazal its share of 1,000 tractors. He says it is too late for farmers in his district to use the tractors this year, but they still need the tractors now to be able to get ready for next year. In any case, Mayuat says even if tractors have arrived on time, farmers in northern Baragazale State would have been able to use them to their full capacity.
The model farming, we are not prepared as a government of northern Baragazale because of the fuel, because of laziness of our minister.
Mayuat did not go into detail about what he meant by, quote, the laziness of the agriculture minister. Achak Thiep Thiep, who chairs the Information and Public Relations Committee, blamed poor planning on the part of the state agriculture minister for the fact that northern Baragazale still has not had its tractors. Thiep says even if the tractors arrive today, they will be too late.
People have already started cultivation, and if they have come, that I don't think they will meet criteria or the plans. So we have seen Honorable Minister has failed, and when he's transporting them from Juba to Awil, it will merit Awil after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, which will completely at the end of the cultivation. So we have seen Honorable Minister has failed on his plan in Minister of Agriculture.
Meanwhile, the State Minister of Agriculture, Lualdao Muraj, says the tractors could arrive in Awil any day now.
We were invited to Juba about 3 weeks ago by the President of the Republic, where he handed them over to us ceremonially. What is left is the logistics, and we haven't received them yet in northern Baragazale, but they will be here very soon.
Dao says all 76 tractors have already been farmed out and are expected to significantly boost productivity on farms around the state.
First of all, the 16 tractors that are going to Awura schemes is only going to be used for that scheme, which is a national project in which we need to use those 16 tractors. For the 60 tractors, what we agree is that we are going to introduce centers. The problem with tractors is not just having them, but you want to have a workshop where you will be able to fix them if something goes wrong. So what we have decided, we will divide them by counties. We have 5 counties. We will make sure that each county gets shares based on the populations.
Dow says the state is working with farmers to help learn techniques that are probably better suited to South Sudanese farmers than tractors anyway.
Those farmings will help our farmers because we have the ox plow training. And what will happen is that these plows are modern agriculture. They are very cheap. They will help our people. I feel like this ox plow training is more better and suitable to our society more than tractors, because we don't have parts. When the tractors breaks down, it's very hard to get parts. Also, when you need fuel for tractors, it's very expensive, which also leads to the rise of the price of the food.
Dow says another argument in favor of ox plows over tractors is the fact that northern Baragazale has a huge number of cattle and very few tractors. For VOA News, I'm Abraham God reporting in Awil.
Meanwhile, thousands of miles away in the United States, farmers are weighing in on President Kiir's decision to buy 1,000 tractors for South Sudanese farmers. Karen Zaivogo spoke earlier this month with a group of American farmers who were at a workshop to learn how to choose and operate a tractor.
Tractors are kind of complicated. Mike Snow, a vegetable farmer from the U.S. state of Virginia, and
Casey Gustavaro, I manage the farm at Sunnyside in Rappahannock County, Virginia,
are leading two groups of around 20 American farmers each through this workshop on tractors at the Mutu Orchard, which is also in Virginia. They tell the farmers that there are different kinds of tractors, and what a farmer buys, or what the president of a country buys for farmers, depends on how the tractor is going to be used.
If you're going to be moving poultry pens, or if you know that your work is going to be lifting things, for example, or moving hay bales or moving feed, then you want a certain kind of tractor. In that case, you'd be looking at a utility tractor, which might be a little larger.
Once the farmer has decided whether they need a big utility tractor or a tractor that can be driven through rows of maize or wheat plants without running over the crops, or even a tractor made to work very large tracts of land, they have to choose their implements. And the choice is dizzying.
You could use a chisel plow, you could use a bottom plow, you could use a flail mower, a bed shaper here,
reverse rotation tiller.
And that's not even a complete list. Farmers also have to decide if they want a new tractor or a used one. Snow says many vegetable farmers in America prefer old tractors because they're mechanical and easier to fix when they break down. New tractors, like the ones President Kiir bought, often have complicated onboard computer systems that tend to make repairs a job for a high-tech genius. Gustavaro says buying tractors for an entire nation, as President Kiir did, has its pluses and minuses. He says one tractor can take the place of several South Sudanese manual labor farmers, which means
you're cutting out those potential employment opportunities, but then there's more land that could be in production and more opportunity for people to have higher skilled labor being able to operate a tractor.
Dina Liebman is the executive director of Future Harvest CASA, the group that organized the tractor workshops. Looking on the positive side, she suggests that President Kiir's donation of tractors
matched with a literacy program so that reading becomes part of farming, learning how to farm so that they can read books that can teach them about different kinds of practices, how to use the implements, how to maintain the tractors. So there's all sorts of possibilities for this being a fabulous program.
Liebman suggests that the U.S. government could fund such a program and provide the teachers. And in fact, USAID already runs a program called Farmer to Farmer, which sends American farmers to East Africa to share their skills and knowledge with their African counterparts. Bruce White manages the Farmer to Farmer program in East Africa for Catholic Relief Services, or CRS, which implements the skills sharing program for USAID.
We are working in four countries in East Africa: Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and Ethiopia. We think since we are in the region that we could actually expand the program to South Sudan. We have great skills and many people who would be very interested in working in South Sudan in a broad range of agricultural types of activities.
Including how to operate a tractor. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
This is one piece of equipment that a lot of my crew will drive the train.
South Sudan's agriculture minister, Beda Machar, says the tractors that President Kiir bought for the nation are made in Belarus and Pakistan. Machar says the tractors have not been handed over to farmers in the states yet because farmers need to be taught on how to use the machinery first.
We need to put things together so whenever the tractor goes to the field, to the states, it will be operational, direct to the field for cultivation. We have set another model of forming the centers, establishing the centers at the state level where the tractors can be maintained.
Machar says the tractors are equipped with all necessary farming parts, although he did not go into detail. He says Mr. Kiir's office has promised to give more financial support to the tractor program to pay for fuel and maintenance, for example.
The government is serious to support agriculture, and the food security will not be a problem as soon as we go. And I believe our farming population will be in a position to produce down.
Machar says it will be a challenge to get tractors up and running in the three states of Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile, where fighting recently flared up again. Machar spoke with Philip Thornaleu in Juba for that report. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Potential by Radio and Whistle. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Please remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Muchitenge, nangu muchitamala, awa supisi.